This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're very welcome back to Radio Navan with Sean O'Brien here.
That's pretty good, Paul. You need more vowels, though.
Vowels.
How are you?
Hello and welcome to the Coca-Cola factory here in Navan. My name
That's
is...
That's kind of dry. Navan is just more Navan. Like Manchester, nearly.
Is it? Are you as mad for it in Navan as they are in Manchester?
Mad for it. Like, it's... Very vowely.
Vowel.
And we put the emphasis.
How
the
now?
Syllable.
How now, bone cow?
Have a bag of fertilizer.
Fertilizer. Anyway, how is F&I Rap Chat back with the Pals?
Hello, hello. So our guest today is Moss O'Brien, Morris O'Brien. We talk about that on the podcast, which he prefers. Moss is a fantastic documentary maker. And as you always say, full disclosure, it's a mate of mine. Mm-hmm. He's a lovely guy. He worked in the BBC for a while, made a lot of content there for things like the Art Show, Art and Culture.
The Culture Show with Mark Kermode.
Yeah. And he's back in Ireland the last year or two making...
Is it Kermode? Is it Kermode or Kermode?
Kermode.
Kermode?
Kermode, which is another name for a
Jaxi,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm just going out to the Kermode.
Or is it the portable Jaxi?
It's an outhouse.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, okay. That's what a Kermode is. Or yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
Sound chap, really, really down to earth, and you know, one of us plying his trade, lads. You know.
Yeah, yeah. So we talk about pitching and you know getting rejected and make you know coming up with ideas.
It's funny you mention pitching there. I mentioned it last week, but we have a workshop with Ip Winchin, who's been over before.
He puts the Ip in script.
He's a proper little hipster.
You can have that one for free.
So he's coming over and he's given a general dramaturgy and writing series of different workshops over the space of a week in A4 Sounds. A4 Sounds are a multidisciplinary arts resource in Dublin who have been very good to us from the start.
Up there on the Dorset Street.
Yes, and I believe they're looking for new members. So if you want to surround yourself with some really interesting artists and creative folk, Andy and Lisa and Donald and the rest of the gang are doing some great work there. So,
and that's actually how me and Paul, we met years ago, but how we started kind of working together again.
Yeah, we had a moment across the crowded workspace. And I was like, hey. And he's like, hey. Well, no, he's more like, it's on there from the 24th, usual carry-on. Check out our social networks for details about that. There's also some video content that Ip has made, so you get a feel for the guy to know that it's not a pyramids game. and he's from Vienna, but by way of Mother Russia. A great guy. He'll motivate the bejesus out of you, and I'm not exaggerating because he has me. So Moss.
Yeah, so we'll let's jump into the episode with Moss.
Yeah. Hashtag man.
Brand new studio here with Moss O'Brien. Did you say Moss or Morris? Which do you prefer?
My professional name is Morris, but you can call me Moss. You can call me anything you like, Paul.
Okay, gotcha. So we might just go back to the start and how you got into film.
Oh my god! TV. Oh my god!
You just want to pop yourself up on a therapeutic
no
couch there.
We just get right into it. Yeah.
Back in the dark old days. Well, I started out as a print journalist, actually. I went to college in UCC, and I did a lot of music journalism there. I just love music. You know, kind of first love. I think a lot of doc makers that I know anyway are kind of either musicians or actually kind of frustrated musicians. I don't know what that is about, but that's how I kind of got started. And I used to do radio shows on UCC radio and a lot of writing for the college magazine there. Right. And then was always kind of interested in photography. But never really thought of working in TV or in documentaries. Until basically I was 25 and I'd actually, you know, I'd been working as a print journalist for a few years. I was really struggling to make a living from it in Dublin. Yeah. And it was 2005. It was right at the height of the boom as well, you know. So I just thought, God, you know, and I didn't have anybody just trying to get a foot in the door anywhere. It was just so hard.
Yeah.
So I ended up applying to the BBC in London just to go over and do 2 weeks work experience with them, and then basically got accepted and went over for what I thought would be for, you know, just, well, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And kind of ended up being in the UK for 13 years.
Wow. So, yeah.
And was that starting out, did you go straight to Scotland or was that?
No, that was in London. So I was in London for 3 years. It just so many avenues opened up the minute I kind of landed in there, you know. Now, having said that,
you mean they immediately when you arrive there, they don't hear your accent and tell you to leave?
Well, I was paranoid going over there. I grew up on a farm in Tipperary, so you know, you're going over to work for the British Broadcasting Corporation. It was kind of intimidating, but then you know, you realize there's somebody over there from Ethiopia, there's somebody over there from Syria. It's nobody cares that you're from Ireland. And if they do, then it's a good thing, you know. So
It worked for you as opposed to against you.
Absolutely, yeah. Having said that, the 2 weeks work experience were on this program called Watchdog. And when I got there, it turned out that Watchdog wasn't actually on air at the time and that they were basically kind of in between series and they were moving office. So the 2 weeks of work experience basically involved me driving a white van around London, shifting furniture. So that was a bit they wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't Irish, you know. But you know.
They saw me coming.
Yeah.
Is that the show?
Anne Robinson.
Yeah.
Did she wink at you?
I didn't even meet Anne Robinson. She wasn't there. Just me and some other poor devil driving that bloody van around, you know.
And was there kind of a culture there of once you're in, they kind of take you under their wing and it's a kind of apprenticeship kind of culture?
You know, that would have been the tail end of that, I think.
Okay.
To some extent, there still was at that point. And, you know, it was just that thing of, you know, hustling with humility. Somebody once used that phrase to me and it's just like, you know, and I think the Irish are quite good at that, you know, just going up and chatting to folk and kind of going, oh, yeah, what are you doing? Oh, okay, that looks interesting. And I kind of ended up getting a trainee researcher job off the back of the work experience thing on a show called Wedding Stories, which was one of the first BBC Three shows, which basically there's obviously a million shows now on TV about weddings and, you know, Don't Tell the Bride and all that kind of stuff. But this is one of the first ones. And actually it was quite a well-made documentary series, you know, but it basically involved speaking to contributor findings, so speaking to hundreds of women that were about to get married.
Right.
And you know, but so I actually then I could have quite probably stayed in the BBC, but at the time they were running this scheme. The independent companies in London got together to run this scheme called FT2 Skillset 18-month trainee researcher course. So that was fantastic. That was basically an 18-month scheme during which they set you up on placements with four different companies, really good independent production companies. In between each placement, they would send you off to the National Film and Television School in Beaconsfield to do courses in sound, camera, all this kind of stuff. And then as well as that, you had to basically produce and direct two of your own films whilst you were on this scheme. So, and they paid you, you know, they paid you to do it. So so I left the BBC and, you know, there was a few people going, oh God, don't leave the BBC, but went off to do that for 18 months and that was fantastic. You know, and the best thing about it was just getting a camera and not having a clue what to do like with it, and not having a clue like how, what, make a documentary, like, oh God. And it was just that the first kind of time really where you're just going out in the world hunting for stories, trying to find interesting people, and then trying to figure out how you tell that story, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what were the two films? Did you do anything?
The first one was just about this kind of guy. I think he'd been in and out of prison, and he'd done this scheme that basically he was given a market stall down in East London, Bow in East London, right under the shadow of like Canary Wharf and all those towers and stuff. And it was just about this guy just like trying to turn his life around by running this stall. And it was like some quite kind of like real old style East London about this guy, you know.
His name wasn't Derek Trotter by any chance, was it?
Now that you mention, I just called him Del, but yeah.
Kush.
Yeah. And the other one was about a bunch of freegans. You know, I don't know if you know freegans. Freegans are people who essentially attempt to live off only what other people throw away. So they...
Skipping. I think also called skipping.
Exactly, yeah. So following a bunch of guys going around doing that, and which was good life training as much as anything else, especially living in London when you're broke, you know. It's like...
Did you pick up any tricks?
Well, I mean, it was just basically hang around cafes, like any of those like chain cafes at the end of the night, any sandwiches left on their shelves are going straight into the skip out the back. Now, I think some of them have now got this scheme in place where they give it to homeless people. But at that time,
supermarkets, it used to be easy. You just go to the back of the supermarket and they throw stuff out. But I think they've all cracked down on that now.
They've started locking the bins which is like, God, just give it to people, you know?
All the humanity.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Humanity. Yeah. So that was the kind of one of the things that I did. And yeah, I mean, it was a great scheme. Of course, that's not running anymore because there's no funding for it. The BBC, and it was essentially set up as an equivalent to the BBC's own scheme, which I think, I'm not sure if that's still running, but it's just harder and harder, I think, now for people these days getting into the industry to try and get that type of training, you know, and especially get paid to do it as well.
Yeah. And your confidence must have skyrocketed after
that. Did, yeah, I guess it did, yeah.
Was that the first time that you felt like a director, a filmmaker, documentarian?
It probably was, yeah, because again, until that point, you know, even if you're kind of a researcher or whatever and you're like picking the phone up and you're calling people and that's all well and good, but actually I think until you've gone out and you've filmed people and, you know, kind of on your own, you know, and doing it all, and then gone in and sat in the edit and had to look back at your rushes, you know, and kind of cringing. So why didn't I just hold a shot, man? It was really, really good training, you know.
And from there, how did you end up?
From there, then I ended up going back to the BBC. There was a job came up on a program called The Culture Show, which used to be presented by two presenters called Lauren Laverne and Mark Kermode. And it was basically just a really, really cool arts magazine show, you know.
It's a great show.
Has anything replaced that?
Not really. They started making long form culture show films, like 60-minute films, but. Okay. No, they haven't really. Like the BBC's arts, as somebody that worked in the BBC arts department for a long time, like everybody would say it. Like, they give so much kind of, they talk about their, like, giving prominence to the arts a lot, but God, they don't at all on their mainstream channels. And they've just been cutting budgets left, right, and center and axing things like the culture show and stuff, you know. So,
did Kermode tell you his Herzog story?
Oh yeah, he was interviewing
the culture show.
Yeah, on it was on the culture show. Yeah, Herzog got shot, I think, whilst being interviewed by Kermode. And typical.
Did you not hear about this?
No.
In typical Herzog style, he's just like, "Oh, I think I might have been shot," but just continues on with the interview.
Did he say something like, "The bullet can't kill creativity," or something like?
Let's just say he did. Let's just say he did. In fairness, it was only a pellet gun. You know,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It wasn't an actual bullet, but still.
The masterclass.
The bullets, they do nothing.
Yeah.
You know the masterclass, the website, and you pay.
Oh, yeah.
Did you do that? Is that worth it?
I've done a few. Yeah, I mean, so you do one, it's like $90 or €75 or something like that, and then they give you an offer then for another €75, you have access to everything.
Oh, so I think
they did the Aaron Sorkin one, and it was really good. And then they're doing a lot more filmmakers, so they have Herzog at the time.
Did you watch the Spacey one?
No, it was gone, actually.
It's like, oh, really? Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, no! Business model gone!
I think he was one of their first big kind of flagships.
He was, yeah.
He was, actually, yeah.
On the floor with everybody. Working things out.
Ron Howard's on there.
Scorsese, really?
Yeah, wow, okay.
So you get to spend like a couple of hours pretty much with these. Herzog was mad. It was just like, just before every film, I read like this ancient Icelandic poetry. You know, it's like, it's very specific. If you want to be a filmmaker, just like Herzog, watch it. But
today's episode is sponsored by Masterclass.
But anyway, we digress. So the culture show.
Yeah. And that was like, at the time, it was just a great, again, like in terms of being a director, a great training ground, because I joined them as a researcher, but then basically just endlessly pitched them ideas. You know, we should be doing that. Let's do that. I basically just annoyed the kind of execs until they allowed me to direct my own little short.
So it'd be like kind of features to go.
They could go up to like 12-minute films, you know. And the good thing about them was that, you know, they'd very often be just a profile of somebody, but actually you were encouraged to make them little works of art in their own right, you know. And they were like, I suppose it was kind of following on in the style of just old style kind of BBC kind of arts programs, like things like Monitor and you know, like the types of things that Ken Russell, you know, they were our kind of heroes. They were the kinds of people that we were trying to follow in the footsteps of.
Arena
was great as well, you know. And that's where people like, say, James Marsh, like, got his start on Arena, you know. So there was a couple of us on the culture show, you know. There was some really, really good directors that you could learn from, that visually were always trying different things. And, you know, there was money there, so you could work with really good cameramen, and you could try stuff, so it was a good place to learn and to make mistakes and kind of be allowed to make mistakes and that kind of thing, you know.
And did that finish up while you were still working there? Or was that later?
I think I'd left by the time that finished up. Okay. you trying to say something, Paul?
No. Were you forced then?
No.
I made the BBC.
No, I mean, it kind of got to the point then where you're just, you know, I did that for like 3 or 4 years, and it was great crack. You know, you'd go to the Edinburgh Festival every year, and you'd just be there for the month, and you'd be making stuff about all the shows on there. But like, you know, ultimately, you know, you're kind of making stuff to a certain formula as well, even though you're trying to kind of invest your own originality into it. Very often, you know, you still got a presenter, you know, you're kind of doing, you don't have a huge amount to say often about what they're asking you to make a film about. And at a certain point, it just kind of got to the stage where I was like, I'm not really learning anything new now anymore. You know, I kind of need to move on, I think.
Go back to Ireland and be unemployable.
Not quite yet.
Decided to be kind of unemployable in Scotland for a bit longer first. But I went on then to kind of do longer form stuff for the Beeb, and did like my first long form thing was again something I pitched myself. I mean, that's the thing, like, you know, I think you just have to make your own work, make the stuff, you know, pitch the stuff that you want to make. And like, God, I pitched them so much stuff, you know, and it just got like straight no.
Right.
And I was pitching them an idea for like years about Northern Soul. I wanted to make a film about Northern Soul, you know.
Yeah.
And that only got commissioned when I'd also been doing stuff for Newsnight, and I've been working with Paul Mason a lot. We used to be the economics editor of Newsnight, and kind of went on to Channel 4, and he still writes at The Guardian and stuff. Really kind of smart guy.
Yeah.
And it was only, I started telling Mason about this Northern Soul thing, and it turned out that he used to go to Wigan Casino, which was like the kind of temple for Northern Soul, when he was 13, and he used to take loads of drugs and stuff and stay up all night dancing to amazing kind of obscure 60s soul music. And so it was only when I, you know, put those two things together, that it was like, oh, well, if Paul Mason will present a program about Northern Soul, then absolutely we'll commission it, you know. So that was my first long form thing.
Because I saw that. So that must have been a big, like a pretty steep learning curve. Or was it just an accident?
I'd say that didn't feel like work at all.
You know, that was actually possibly still the most fun kind of thing I've ever actually worked
on. I can't believe it.
Just the tunes, the sound. Like, I mean, you know, that was one of those things where, like, first day, first week with the editor, we basically sat down and just did a playlist of our favorite Northern Soul tunes. And then it's like, right, let's just make a film that, you know, fits these tunes. But it was, yeah, that was, it was good fun. And then kind of, I think expecting things to be as fun as that afterwards, you know, the reality kind of quickly hit in. But still got to do some really nice and interesting things. I also did a film for BBC Four about a landscape photographer called Tom Wood. He doesn't just do landscapes. So he's Irish, but grew up in England and... But does a lot of work in Mayo, and did a kind of obstock following him going around the place, which was a lot of fun. But the thing with these, like, you know, the thing with these, like, BBC films was, like, you know, and we just talk about budgets getting cut and stuff. We talk about RTE budgets getting cut, but God almighty, it was really the same with the BBC. I mean, it got to the point where, you know, to make that Tom Wood film, it was a half-hour film for BBC Four. We had 5 weeks from beginning to end, like, to make that film. So it was like, you get a call on the Friday going, can you start this on the Monday? You've got, like, a week to research it. Then you've got a week to film. You've got, like, you know, half a week to log, a week to edit, and then a week for post. You know, I'm not sure that adds up to five. But anyway, it was, you know, it was... like
guerrilla filmmaking,
but it was guerrilla filmmaking, but also very pressurized. And when you're wanting,
as well, right?
yeah, and when you're wanting to put your own stamp on things, you know, the main issue was just not getting the time in the edit. They cut edit time now so much, and and I think that for me, when you're kind of looking at wanting to do features and stuff, and you see how long it takes to craft a really good film in the edit, you know, and you're just like, yeah, you're not gonna do that in 7 days, you know, when you haven't had time to log any of the material properly. Like,
yeah, and also something, you must have to be really creative to come up with visual ways of showing, you know, if someone's painting, it's not necessarily the most.
Would you kind of
dynamic
based on that kind of rationale? Would you have to edit in camera as you go? I think I'm gonna use that. That's gonna be used. That's gonna be as you, on the fly, as it were.
Yeah, you kind of
kill your babies with a little bit more.
You know, I'd like to say that I do, but I don't. I still completely overshoot, because, like, you know, it's that old school kind of obstock thing. It's just like, I'm like, just keep the camera rolling, man. Because, like, you never know when gold is going to happen, you know. Mm. And of course, then you end up in the edit and it's like, oh, Jesus, I have to watch all of this stuff. And it's like,
hello, darkness, my old
friend. Yeah, absolutely. But I'd rather be looking at it than looking for it, as they say, you know. I mean, at the same time, what I would say as well is, like, you know, I was kind of struggling to make the BBC stuff feel as creatively rewarding as I always wanted it to be. So I was kind of doing shorts and working with Creative Scotland a little bit as well. And there's a great organization in Scotland called the Scottish Documentary Institute, which are kind of, you know, they're technically a production company, but they're also, like, attached to the Edinburgh College of Art. So a lot of the people that do the masters in documentary there end up kind of working with Scottish Documentary Institute. And they've got all of these, it's run by a French lady and a Portuguese lady and a Belgian lady. And basically they have all of these connections in Scandinavia. So they would run these workshops and bring these amazing Danish producers and directors in to talk to us about documentary filmmaking. And, like, that was like my film school, you know. Making shorts with those guys, and it was so different to TV. I don't know if it's, like, quite the same in Ireland, but, like, there's a real divide, it seems, in Scotland between people that make shorts and features and between people that work in TV.
Right.
And I'm sure there was other people that were making, you know, doing the two, but, like, I was kind of one of the few people that I knew that was actually kind of doing my bread and butter in TV, but then kind of doing
shorts.
Oh,
you were the kid that had, you know, whose mum and dad's lived in separate areas, working class and one in an upper class area.
It was quite
different accents.
Yeah, well, it was quite striking. Like, the people that work in TV would be really sniffy about what they would describe as the Sheffield Brigade, you know, the kind of, like, shorts. Oh, God, whoop-de-doo, like, you've got a short showing in Sheffield. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the people that made the shorts and the features would be like, TV. You know, and, like, it kind of felt like you were starting from scratch when you were, you know, kind of people didn't want to know about any of the TV stuff, you know, that I'd done when I was kind of dealing with.
Yeah, that's great. Like, so, what have you got for me?
And what have you done that's cinematic?
Right. And in general, there seems to be a little bit more support for documentaries and shorts and kind of starting off, whereas it's one of the things in Ireland, it has the lowest amount of kind of schemes of whatever schemes there are for short films, the fewest are for documentaries. Is there a bit more support in the UK?
Well, I don't know if there is actually. I mean, so Scottish Documentary Institute run a scheme called Bridging the Gap. I was like shortlisted for that twice and then made a film as part of that.
So you got rejected. You've been rejected before.
I think this is a common theme
that comes up on the podcast.
If we start talking about rejection, we could be here for a long time. That's why I'm focusing on the bits where I wasn't rejected, because the rejections would far outweigh the amount of times that I have not been rejected. But like, yeah. So there is a little bit of support for shorts. But you know, you look at, it's still mainly people just doing it on their own, you know, and then trying to get it into festivals and trying to use that as a bit of a springboard. I think Film London they kind of put it, you know, occasionally fun shorts, and possibly, I don't know if the Brit Doc or whatever they're called these days, Brit Doc Society, if they still fun shorts, I think they might do. Yeah. But certainly Bridging the Gap, and actually that's the Scottish Documentary Institute, and that's also open to filmmakers from Northern Ireland. And I really highly recommend it, because it's similar to the IFB shorts. I think the budgets are actually lower, but in terms of the exposure you get, you know, again, they will do all of that promotional work and they will get it out there into festivals for you. And also, it's just like amazing workshops and things around it, you know. So I'd really recommend people check that out. Yeah, okay. I got a lot from doing it.
Cool. When then did you make...
what's your favourite colour?
When did you make the decision then? Or when did you kind of decide, okay, I've gotten far enough, or as far as I can get here in the UK, and you just kind of decide to come home?
Basically, I kind of realized that a lot of the films that I wanted to make were basically Irish stories, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I suppose it's that thing of like when you're working inside the BBC and for the BBC, there can be a feeling of like, oh God, well, how can you go anywhere else? You know, it could be a downward step, you know, which is absolute crap.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, a lot of really good directors haven't moved on from the BBC, you know, because of that fear. But like, also, I was just seeing the work that was being made here by documentary filmmakers, you know, and being kind of blown away. Like people like Ken Wardrop, people like Pat Collins, also just filmmakers like Lenny Abramson, you know, like just so much really high quality work. So that kind of made me think, God, you know, like, let's do this. And plus there was things like, you know, Brexit had happened.
Right.
The Scottish independence referendum hadn't gone through. The Tories had come in with a landslide. I was just like, oh God, I've just had enough of it. I never intended to move to the bloody UK in the first place. And it's like 13 years later, it's like, God, 13 years of slavery. Right? It's time to get out of here. But I was nervous. I was very nervous about coming back to Dublin. And I suppose two things that helped were, one, I kind of made a film for The Guardian, but about Ballyhaunis and County Mayo, called Pitching Up, which was, you know, that as a way of kind of being back in Ireland and making a film here. That was a really nice kind of introduction back into home. And then the other thing was I got kind of accepted for one of the IFB shorts, got funding for that as well. Hey Ronnie Reagan, to make a film about my home village, Ballyporeen. So it was like, well, this was a better move home.
Yeah, I think I was talking to you around that time, or that's around the time we met, and because I was kind of thinking about moving to the UK for work, and you were kind of asking me, oh, what's it like back home? We both ultimately ended up here anyway.
And lived happily ever after.
Maybe tell us a little bit about that Guardian project and kind of any tips you might have for pitching. You've obviously done a lot, and we mentioned that you got rejected as well, but what do you think was good about the ones that did get picked up?
Again,
what did you do right?
We were very lucky to do again, with the Scottish Documentary Institute, you know, kind of going through those workshops, and you would have to get up in front of an audience and pitch an idea and then have it kind of ripped apart and deconstructed, you know, and told where you were going wrong and everything else. And so with the Guardian thing, I mean, that was actually an open pitch at the Sheffield Documentary Festival. So I had to get up in front of a massive room full of people, and there was five other people vying for the fund. And I had to get up for one fund. And I mean, it was a pittance. It was like $5,000, you know. Really? That's just, I mean, it's kind of depressing when you think about, God, the amount of work people go to for like $5,000. You know, not to be sniffy about that, but I mean, like, it's, you know, I probably...
To make a 15-minute documentary, it's not much.
No, it was probably half what the film cost in the end as well, you know. But it was good exposure. I'm not going to give out about it anymore. and it was, in terms of pitching, I mean, I think...
I mean, is there a magic formula, or, is there a tack that you use, or
it's
cologne? I don't know.
God, well, like, the trailer is obviously all important. If you can get even a little bit of humour in there, it's always going to help.
It's a little sizzle reel.
Yeah, oh God, it's absolutely vital, I think, you know. And I think also just being confident, you know, it's really hard. You know, as soon as you stand up in front of of anybody like that and you have to start pitching, you know, it's so hard. Like, the heartbeat starts going, the sweat starts going, and, you know, kind of maintaining eye contact and maintaining some kind of a smile on your face is really tricky to do. And people kind of smell fear, and they smell when somebody's not that confident, and that kind of gets a bit infectious. And so... Yeah. It's just about, like, having confidence in yourself, I suppose, and...
Do your homework, know your shit.
Do your homework, know your shit, yeah, that's always going to help as well, you know? Yeah. But also just projecting and getting up there and knowing, you know, unfortunately, just, you know, you're a salesperson. A big part of this job is being a salesperson, not just for the idea, but for yourself as well. It's like, yeah, what's the idea? But also, like, why are you the person to make this?
Yeah, why would I give you money?
Mm.
You
know, yeah.
It is very personal in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Absolutely, like, I don't really have any pitching tips, man, to be honest. Wear a funky tie. I wore a funky kind of West African tie that, like, loads of people came up to me after. I loved your tie. I was like, great, yeah, what about the pitch, like?
So then maybe tell us about how Hey Ronnie Reagan came about and how it's doing at the moment.
Hey Ronnie.
Whole journey.
Yeah, Hey Ronnie's doing, oh, good old, yeah.
Hey Ronnie.
So I was sitting at home, like, in Glasgow, kind of racking my brain, you know, I was like, God, yeah, you know, I know what I should do. I should have a look and see what the Irish Film Board, when are their funding deadlines coming up? And looked at, I was like, oh my God, it's next week. And I had a long night of the soul, just like, wow, I don't have any ideas. What am I going to do? And then I just realized, like, you know, that old maxim, just dig where you stand. I realized, like, wait a minute, Ballyporeen. What could I do about Ballyporeen? So, yeah, that time Reagan came to visit us in 1984, you know, which is, like, actually is my earliest memory, which I kind of always knew I'd probably end up doing something about. But anyway, that was, like, as ever, I just need a deadline to kind of kick my ass into gear. So that was, like, that was it. That was the kind of the onus to kind of finally put that idea down on paper and what it might be. And, you know, that, yes, it was kind of like looking back at Ireland in 1984, which, my God, really does seem like a foreign, a distant land now, you know.
Nice place to visit, but you wouldn't want to live.
Absolutely, yeah. But also kind of just wanting to make it a bit of a celebration of, you know, local legends that I kind of grew up around and
Tip
with.
Characters.
And, yeah, absolutely. And I hope the premiere. And also, like, somebody once said to me, you know, when you make a film, it's either like a wish or an elegy. Like, are you making a wish or are you making an elegy? Are you making a film about something that you would like the world to be like this? Or are you making a film about something that, you know, oh God, isn't it so sad that that's
lamenting,
dying out now and it's not going to be here anymore? And I think with the Reagan film, it kind of started as an elegy, actually. It kind of started as me thinking, looking at this village today, and it's so quiet. It's like so many rural places. It's like, God, half the pubs are gone. you know, like the the shops were kind of maybe about to close down. Like the shop was possibly about to close down.
It wasn't called Reagan's.
There
was a Reagan. No, God,
there was a
really.
Yeah, watch the film, man.
Yeah.
But it became a kind of a wish then. Actually, it became quite hopeful because you realized that actually, you know, this place isn't dying on its feet because there's like all these people that are still there, keeping it going, and have such a pride in being from there, you know.
It kind of reminds me of the post office scenario now. A lot of rural post offices are closing now. And they're amalgamating them, obviously, because they're going online. And it just seems like such a travesty that they're... Because a post office is not a post office in a small town.
No, it's a social hub.
It's where, you know, where the Blue Rinse Brigade get their gossip.
I'm not sure how many people still get.
Well, the lads collecting their dole, obviously. All the filmmakers collecting their dole in small towns.
Yeah, that's more like it. Oh, sure, look, I'm not going to start going on about...
Oh, Ireland, you're worth it, the Shenachie. I'll just ask a question or two. Any tips, advice for young filmmakers, young documentarians out there fighting the good fight? About how to get their foot in the door, or you know, kick it open, or
Jesus.
Jack Nicholson. It.
I think don't be hanging about waiting for, you know, to get a job in RTE. I mean, that kind of goes without saying these days, because it's not going to happen. You know, I think you just need to. It's just no excuse now, and I'm sure young filmmakers are sick of hearing this, but like, there's no excuse now not to just grab a camera and go and film something. You know, You know, finding those stories and just, again, you know, it's very often the stories are on your doorstep, you know. It doesn't have to be some big massive issue, but like stories that are filmed over a course of time, like, you know, just are always interesting. And I think increasingly I'm realizing that like I've got all these great like one-liner ideas, but like increasingly I'm realizing that, my God, the amount of effort and time it takes to bring any one of those ideas to fruition, to the end, it requires so much blood and sweat and tears that you need to really believe in it, and you need to kind of really kind of want to make it, and it needs to be something that really genuinely interests you, you know. Having said that, you know, sometimes you just need to go out and make films about whatever. It doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't need to be like, oh my God, this is the film of my life.
Opus. Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just need to go out there and do it and just like get that kind of experience under your belt. Like,
would you encourage people not, in some cases, to get emotionally attached to projects, because you can go down with the ship if you're not careful.
Yeah,
you know that school of, right, it's a fucking great idea. It's a great idea. I know it is, and people around me know it is.
Yeah.
And this is great.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't get funded, I have to move on. I have to go to the next thing.
And I've seen that in pitching workshops where people are so emotionally attached to the idea that they can't accept any advice about how they might kind of approach it differently, you know? And you're kind of going, you know, it could be a really good idea, but have you thought about doing it in this way? And it's like, no, this is how I'm doing it. And, you know, and people become so kind of stuck in a rut to some extent. Emotionally attached. And I think it's such a thin line between, because you need that emotional attachment, you need that passion, like, to kind of push on with the idea. But at the same time, you need to be able to be detached enough
and be a sociopath. Be a sociopath. That's the way forward if you want to do well.
Well, if you really, you know, see it from, and I, you know, I wish I was better at doing this myself, but like, see it from a sales distributor's point of view. Do you know what I mean? It's like, they don't care like how long you've been working on this. All they're gonna be thinking is like, who's gonna watch this? And it's that old, Jesus, like, especially if you're trying to make a feature or whatever, it's like, would my mate down the pub, would he pay 15 quid on a Friday night to go and see this? Like, you know? It's tough, man. Like, you need to be kind of really honest with yourself, but then you need that, you need that kind of temporary madness to descend upon you to get those projects kind of up and running and then over the line, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's draining. Like, I'm just finished this big doc on the Abbey Theatre now, like, and it is just like, you know, come out the other end of it and it's just like, oh my God, where have the last fucking five, 6 months of my life gone to, you know?
Yeah. Do you have a date for that, or
can you talk about it?
I can talk about it, yeah. I mean, so basically, again, I suppose I'm in a situation now where I'm just trying to figure out how you make this life sustainable, you know? Mm-hmm. So So I've set up my own company and was like really, really lucky. Like the first thing that I pitched to RT, they basically commissioned, which is fantastic. But it was basically an observational documentary following the two new directors of the Abbey Theatre, Graham McLaren and Neil Murray, who came over from Scotland to basically take over the Abbey, which is, you know, Ireland's national theatre. And
No pressure.
And, you know, both guys, like, they hadn't spent a huge amount of time in Ireland, and the Abbey is like got such a weight of history attached to it and all that kind of stuff. And they're very forward-thinking, you know, quite left-wing guys, like, you know. I mean, you know, yeah, Graham is kind of proud socialist. So, like, it's interesting. And then the fact that, like, they were coming from Scotland, I had just moved from Scotland back to Ireland, seeing kind of Ireland through their eyes, was that was kind of the reason that I wanted to do the project, you know. But again, you know, it was like 6 months of film and kind of just in my spare time before I got any funding from RTE to actually do it full time. And yeah, so it's going to be on RT in the autumn. I think it's quite happy with it, you know. It could have possibly been a feature, but I just, filming in theatres is an absolute rights nightmare. Okay. So I was just like, let's not make this any more difficult than it already is, you know, seeing as it is my first kind of thing with my own company.
It's a great idea. I mean, it's really surprising that no one else.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, like, I saw them do a talk in the Science Gallery.
Right.
And they just kind of blew. They were so funny, so self-deprecating, passionate about what they wanted to do and about how they wanted to open up the Abbey to, like, you know, kind of all audiences.
Of the people.
Yeah, you know, which is not, you know, the Abbey, was, you know, I think it's fair to say would have come to have been seen as a quite a stuffy place maybe in recent years. I just, like, I think it was just that chutzpah thing. I just, like, went up to them afterwards and I was just like, lads, is there anybody, like, making a documentary about this? And they were like,
no. All right, Paul, sit down there. Making
a film? I did actually kind of put on my terrible kind of semi-faux Scottish accent.
Like mine.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm hoping that we might get a screening somewhere. Like, I might go to Galway Film Festival or possibly have a screening in the Abbey or, you know, but
keep us informed.
I will. Let
our listeners we'll give it a plug. If not, like, it needs it, but we'll give it a plug.
Oh, no, all plugs.
Will there be any festivals or anywhere that people could see Hey Ronnie?
Hey Ronnie. Yeah, so we had our international premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival there in April, which was that was pretty cool. Actually, it was pretty cool. Now, fair play. Culture Ireland gave us a little grant to go over there.
They're great lads for that.
They're faking great. Fair play to
pocket money.
Yeah. Oh, well, pocket money. It barely covered the cost of the hotels. Bloody hell. Yeah. But it was fantastic. Like, they kind of look after you once you're over there then, you know, just like free cocktail parties, everything. Nice. And we had a director's kind of brunch then on one of the days. And
go on, you can name drop if you like. Who was there?
I'll name drop Steve Kenny. I don't know if you know Steve. He's a young Irish director. You should get him on here. He's great. He had a film called Time Traveler showing there. And so me and Steve were just like knocking back the mimosas, like going, oh my God, it doesn't
get
any better.
What the fuck are we doing here?
Bobby De Niro came out and gave us a little kind of pep speech and was just you know, you're part of the family now, you know. And I was like, oh my God, you said we're part of the family. And not to kind of take the magic away, but he was kind of like dressed like a slightly disheveled golfer, and then he kind of like banged his head as he was walking off stage, which slightly detracted from the magic. But hey, Robert De Niro, man. And like, and only 1% of submissions get into Tribeca. So it's like kind of, I'll say that, go and make films and shorts and submit them and just like get your own thing off the ground. But it also makes you realize like the importance of having somebody like the backing of somebody like the film board behind you, because like there's so many submissions going to these places. And, you know, if you can, the fact that it's coming from the film board just opened so many doors for us. Well, it opened that door. We wouldn't have gotten in there otherwise.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who publicly kind of defame the film board from time to time. And don't do that, lads. Do it with, you know, from a distance and behind.
Yeah.
If you're in a glass house, don't throw any stones.
Well, it'll be interesting. I'm hoping, you know, I suppose the next stage for me now is to try and make a feature. I'm dying to make a couple of, start making feature docs now. So
you've got your application hat on.
Yeah. Trying to get some development funding, hopefully, and see where it goes from there. But, you know, yourselves, it's like, you kind of essentially end up doing a lot of that stuff in your spare time because you have to kind of earn a crust as well. So,
and it's very time consuming.
That's so time consuming.
Full time job.
We were just talking about doing a BAI app. Oh God, like let's not even talk about it because this is dull.
Yeah, how's the paperwork going?
No, we'll finish on high note. Yeah, did you say there's somewhere that people will be able to
Ronnie? God, so I mean, we screened at Cork, we screened at Dublin, was at Fastnet Film Festival in Skull there last week, I think. So I'm not. I need to double check the producer Dan Hegarty. I'm sure if he hears this, he'll be giving out to me for not giving a plug.
We'll put it on the notes.
But it's doing the rounds. Like it's going to be at Sydney Film Festival. It's going to be at Newport Dallas Film Festivals, just in case you guys are around. And we always knew it would play well with American audiences, like you know, given the Reagan kind of content. So it's doing well over there.
The nice Republican red.
Yeah. Congrats on all of that.
I'm kidding for
best of luck. We're looking forward to seeing the Abbey doc. What have you got a title?
It's called The Abbey, A Riot of Their Own.
Great. Cool. We'll keep an ear out for that. And if you let us know, we'll let the listeners know.
Great. Thanks, lad. Thanks. And keep up the good work. This is a great podcast. Really interesting. We've had some brilliant people on, and fair play to you for doing it. So, keep
we'll
it up.
Definitely keep that bit in.
I promised myself I wouldn't do this today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. You're very good.
Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks.